This is special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. Today we're focusing entirely on the economy, taking a look at the current wilting financial system we're living in and what it might look like in the future. As always, if you have questions for us, let us know on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Friday, May 29th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. Another 2.1 million Americans filed for unemployment insurance last week as the novel coronavirus continues ripping through our nation's economy. There are now 40 million people in this country who are considered unemployed, translating to an official unemployment rate of 14.7%, with the broader U6 unemployment rate, which includes part-timers who cannot find a full-time job and those who have given up looking, standing at 22.8%. While physicians and nurses battle to keep patients alive, the economy is withering. Is this a temporary blip, or do fundamental changes to America's standard of living lie ahead? To make sense of this exploding unemployment, the ripple effects lashing the rest of the economy, and how that might play out, NSPR's Mark Albert spoke with Dr. Robert Eiler, professor of economics and director of the Center for Regional Economic Analysis at Sonoma State University, where he also serves as the dean of the School of Extended and International Education. Mark started the conversation off with a simple question. What the heck is going on?
Well, what's happening is basically two major items. One is that demand has been reduced because we've decided to reduce our economic lives based on shelter in place. So part of that is that without demand, I don't have revenues at a business. And the first thing I'm going to look for, where can I cut costs to try to remain in business during this sort of hibernation time? And usually the first place businesses look at are jobs, because they have other fixed costs that they can't easily relieve themselves of. The second piece, which is maybe the more positive piece, is that as we start to come out of shelter in place, those high magnitude numbers will hopefully reduce relatively quickly down to some at least initial steady state. And the game right now we're playing is the more those numbers rise and the longer this goes on, and this is the key, will we start to lose businesses such that the economic capacity to rehire the folks that have lost their jobs are going to go away. So those are the two major items that are feeding into those high unemployment rates, is that you might have some business losses. And initially, job losses in a situation like this are kind of classic recession entry points. It's really dependent on how we lose capacity in the economy to bring those jobs back.
Dr. Eiler, how big of a problem is this?
Well, you know, it kind of, again, harkens to what I said, in that the problem becomes larger and starts to, in a sense, expand quickly when businesses go away. So, and there's also two angles on that. One angle is that there's a bunch of businesses who are already marginal, that all this did was expose the cracks in the cement and basically the earth swallowed them up. It's something that recession does a lot, and people have written about this for hundreds of years, that at some point the cycle ends where some of the businesses that just were already creaking basically topple over. So there's that part of it, and that loses capacity. And that's kind of classic recession. The problem in this one is there may be some really good businesses who simply through the lack of demand or the timing of this in the cycle, because especially if you're a tourism business, a restaurant, a hotel, something that, you know, where this time of the year is where you really bank on those additional revenues to get you through the downtime. You might be a really good business otherwise that just happens to have seasonality inside of it. But the longer this goes on and the more it eats into that revenue year, the trickier your ability is to keep that good business going. So that's where the depth of this gets a little deeper and a little more structural versus cyclical. And that, for an economist, that's one of the biggest warning signs about entering recession, is what policies do you put together to try to keep most of the good structure of the economy in place? And that's why fiscal and monetary policy have been so big and so responsive, at least in the last couple of months.
Many businesses in some states across the country have been reopening in recent weeks. Why isn't the unemployment rate falling?
Well, it's not falling because other industries are losing jobs faster than rehiring. And so one of the things we have seen, Mark, that is potentially very marginally positive is that the speed at which claims are rising is slowing down. Even though it's 2 million more people, it was 6.5 million just a few weeks ago. The next thing economists look for are so-called continued claims for unemployment insurance, because that's where you see the folks who initially lost their job maybe get rehired and go off unemployment insurance. And in fact, if you look at the continued claims data that just came out also, that has actually maybe started to peak. And if that peaks, then that means we may be slowly turning the corner back to rehiring. But that flow in net is the big issue. And so that's why the continued claims are going to be the focus. Once we feel like initial claims have slowed down enough to the point where it's like, okay, we kind of expected this, and here we go again, another week of lost jobs, maybe a million jobs. If people are being rehired, the continued claims are going to start to fall more quickly.
There's an assumption that once the closures are over, that like a retracted spring, people will rush out and do things they haven't been able to do, rush out and spend, celebrate, do all the things they've been denied, and that will drive economic activity. Investors seem to be optimistic. Stock indexes have largely recovered from their steep slide. Are investors right, or is this misplaced optimism?
Well, on the equity market side, you know, economists usually don't recommend looking at equity markets as a forecaster of what's going to happen short of investor confidence. So the one thing about the market is that the market priced in a big problem in March, and that's why we dove very quickly. As soon as the fiscal and monetary policies became extremely responsive to the crisis, the stock market got much more exuberant relatively quickly, and we kind of V-shaped the change in the market, which is good in some sense because it suggests that those investors are seeing positivity coming. And some of that's a bet on a vaccine at some point, and some of it's also a spec bet that we went down too far in the first place. But you're going to see, and a lot of the pundits are out there suggesting that the market has another bottom it might find later in the year, especially if we reinfect and have a threat of going back into shelter in place again. That's really the critical factor in the market, is they're sort of pricing the idea through that either the American economy is going to make adjustments to reduce a second round of this issue, or a vaccine is coming. On the other side of it, this sort of, you know, potential coming out party, a lot of that's going to depend on consumer confidence in terms of people believing they're either going to get their jobs back or that their jobs stayed in place and they have the ability economically to go out and make those choices. And the second is going to be the duration of the unemployment episode for the rest of the economy that lost its job. If that's relatively short, then there's going to be sort of this rolling hill effect of initial exuberance coming out that will then plateau. And then as more and more people get their jobs, there'll be another round of it, and so on and so on. But the key is the duration of unemployment. If we have over 10 or 12% unemployment in the United States, maybe for 12 or 16 months, there'll be an initial coming out party, but it will flatten pretty quickly. And we're going to go right back to sort of this, you know, recession-ish economy probably for the next couple of years. So there'll be some of that. There's no doubt about it. But a lot of that will be driven by the people who still have a job, or at least have the confidence their job is coming back and are willing to spend now. But that might fade very quickly if we don't get jobs coming back. In other words, that confidence is not, in a sense, corroborated by rehiring.
Right. And that's what I find so hard to imagine. With almost a quarter of the workforce unemployed and having to survive on $1,200 for 10 weeks or more, where are they going to have the money to go out on a spending spree?
Absolutely correct. And the last thing we want people doing is using the credit markets to do that. We're going to be watching very closely if we see more household debt pile up than we expected, and see whether or not we see much of a change in retail sales and in what categories, to see where people might be moving their money with respect to retail spending once we open up completely from shelter in place. But the last thing we want is relatively low income workers who are now maybe on unemployment increasing their credit card debt simply because they are either now fearing death, maybe if COVID-19 comes back and they get it, or just saying that I'm going to spec bet on my job coming back and I'm going to go ahead and pile up debt now in the hope I get rehired. The real true hope is that we actually guide those folks maybe into educational opportunities and prepare for a career switch, especially if there's structural change in certain industries where their job may not be coming back ever.
Some economists are arguing we'll see a V-shaped recovery, one where we bounce back quickly. Others are arguing we'll see a U-shaped recovery, which would be a longer period of low or negative economic growth. And finally, New York University economist Dr. Nouriel Roubini, who predicted the 2008 crash and is referred to by some as Dr. Doom, he believes we'll see an L-shaped recovery, meaning it's going to be a long haul before things pick up. What would have to happen to make each of those three scenarios come to life?
Of course. So the alphabet soup of recovery is something we saw at the end of the Great Recession as well. A lot of people out there sort of selling forecasts that had different doom and gloom scenarios as well as more optimistic scenarios. The V-shaped recovery depends on the structure of the economy remaining in place such that jobs will come back relatively quickly. So if businesses are not lost and they say, okay, great, we've now opened up from shelter in place. I see the future is bright. I'm going to rehire the folks that I let go. And we're going to slowly come back to where we started 2020 in a sense. And we'll get back to the baseline relatively quickly. There's very few recession episodes, especially when there's been such a contraction in demand like this, that we're going to have something that you'd think of as V-shaped. So a lot of the hypotheses around that are sort of twofold. One, don't lose structure in the economy. The second, it's more like a natural disaster that once we get out of this disaster mode, we're going to want to go right back and reclaim our economic lives. The problem in this situation is so many people have lost their job that the supposition is they'll all be rehired again with the same capacity of the economy bets on a relatively small number of business losses. The U-shape is where those business losses happen. You have this sort of depth hit and you get a short-term steady state where you're trying to figure out where the economy is going. Then entrepreneurship, adaptation, innovation take place, businesses are reborn or new industries are born, and we start to move back up the ladder. That's more of that flat period where we kind of go down, stay down for a while, and then make our way up maybe a little bit more quickly. And that's kind of how the Great Recession played out in California. It's sort of a modified U where we went down, stayed down for a couple of years. Once we figured out the housing market and new technology and realized that there was a lot of capacity in the economy and we were ready to fill it, we got going pretty quick. The L shape is where we go down, stay down because there's been structural change we haven't filled. So imagine we lose 25% of the restaurants in California, or we lose 25% of retail in California, and there's structural change in those markets such that there's no reason for those businesses to come back. They won't be able to compete. That means that the potential outcomes in the economy have shifted down, potentially permanently, and that's where the L idea comes from. That you go from where you were straight down and then flatten to a new steady state that's actually medium to long term. That's kind of the basic alphabet soup out there. There's also a W scenario where there's a double dip. You go down quick, you start to go up, then we get reinfected, we don't have a vaccine, we go back down because of a second shelter in place, and then we come back up again.
In an interview with New York Magazine, one of the things Dr. Roubini noted was Germany. They've had very few deaths, many fewer cases than the U.S., and have been reopened for a while. He said the malls and shops are empty, that people there aren't spending, that there's little confidence and a lot of concern. And that can become a self-feeding cycle.
It can be. And the German economy is kind of a funny example because it was already kind of sputtering going into 2020, where the U.S. had a much better outlook going over the next few years. The German economy had actually been rolling around recession already. So confidence is relatively low in Germany to start with. And so it's possible that the German economy is, while a large economy and a good example of exactly that phenomenon that he's trying to show, the baseline in Germany was not that great to start with. However, it does suggest that even in a relatively robust economy, a lack of consumer confidence can easily stretch out the bads from a recession if policy and just general business and consumer confidence don't pick up relatively quickly.
One of the other things he mentioned was our trade war with China and that reshoring, American companies bringing back manufacturing to the U.S., that when those businesses come back, they'll be mainly automated and that the jobs just won't return.
It's a good point, and it is something that economists are watching closely. And, you know, to take it one step further, let's say that there is federal money that would come in to potentially repatriate specific types of manufacturing in healthcare, like healthcare machinery. You know, a lot of controversy about ventilators and respirators not being available short of getting them from offshore. Personal protection equipment, making it in the United States for the United States if we have a second round, so we don't have to worry about bringing it in from some other place. If that's not tied to jobs growth to get the money, there'll be a strong incentive to automate those new manufacturers in the United States as well. So there's no doubt about the fact that one of the things manufacturing around the world is going to take a serious look at is whether or not we really want to have these many workers if, in fact, this episode is going to repeat, either the current episode or a new strain is going to come back, and we're not prepared for that. If we have machines, machines aren't going to get sick. Now, the problem with that hypothesis is that if there is a concern in the economy, even if you have machines, if there's not demand, then you'll have a bunch of idle machines.
But if you're not putting money in people's pockets by providing them jobs, how are they going to be able to buy the products that they're even making?
100%. So that's why I said earlier that the key to that is whether or not there would be demand regardless of how you automate. The economics of automation depend on demand being there, just like the economics of rehiring depend on demand being there. So if demand sags again, or we go into what you asked about before in terms of an L-shaped recovery, the economics of making that large fixed cost choice to automate may not be there, but then also the economics of rehiring won't necessarily be there. So it's a very tricky balance we're on right now with manufacturing worldwide.
You're listening to special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. Today, we're focused on the economy and how the effects of this pandemic might play out in a discussion with Dr. Robert Eiler, professor of economics and director of the Center for Regional Economic Analysis at Sonoma State University. More just ahead. This is special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Before the break, we were hearing an interview about the economy and the long-term effects this pandemic might have on it between NSPR's Mark Albert and Dr. Robert Eiler, a professor of economics and director of the Center for Regional Economic Analysis at Sonoma State University, where he also serves as dean of the School of Extended and International Education. Let's get back to the conversation.
In California, real estate is a large part of the economy. Certainly mortgages, home construction, and new household formation, which leads to big purchases like furniture and appliances. Now, I can only speak anecdotally, but it seems that homes appear to be lingering on the market, at least here in Chico. Now, we do have a kind of a special market with people burned out in the campfire adding to demand. What's the real estate situation more broadly?
Generally speaking, the real estate situation seems to be stable for now. A lot of that depends, again, on the duration of unemployment. So what housing economists right now are forecasting for a relatively flat year in this sort of rolling window toward 2021. There was initially some optimism out there that rural California would see a renaissance in real estate, that people would want to abandon the urban or, let's say, large suburban settings, port their portable job to a more rural or smaller suburban setting like Chico, Redding, et cetera, in sort of the North State. And now that has somewhat reversed with the idea that people are most likely to stay in place for, let's say, the next year to try to figure out their economic lives and then may make a change. So there's actually some positivity there for small suburban and rural California to see an influx of high-tech jobs in kind of a weird way, in that economic development did not necessarily bring them, but that people want to be out of the urban center and having the flexibility to work off-site now may lead them to a place that's less densely populated, less expensive, but has all the same sort of infrastructure otherwise, including the outdoors and lifestyle considerations that you can't get in the city. We will see if that takes place. But for right now, we're expecting a pretty flat year where supply and demand might just kind of walk hand in hand with a little bit more supply than demand. But with lower interest rates and potentially developers being nervous about building a lot of additional housing units because they don't know where demand is going, a lot of the housing market is going to depend on how many existing units go on market. And if people have long durations of unemployment and say, you know, we just can't afford to stay in the house, that's where you might see a sprinkle of, like, let's say the Great Recession round two in housing. I don't think it's going to be as severe, but again, a lot of it depends on how fast people who own a home get their jobs back.
Leaving macroeconomics and drilling down more to a local level, over the past, say, century, there's certain types of communities. Now, I wouldn't say they're immune from downturns and recessions, though they are where they seem to be greatly insulated, and that's college towns. There's always a steady stream of people coming to learn. There's a professional class that tends to have a good salary and job security. But now, with classes suspended and moved online, are college towns in for a stark future?
Certainly in the short term, it's going to be very interesting to watch how towns like, let's say, Chico and Davis specifically react to a general movement online, even for 6 months, because of how much of the economies of those towns are tied to the university's movements. Now, both Davis and Chico have expanded and become more balanced. And that's certainly something that both economic development in both places has been very keenly aware of and has done a great job over the last 10 or 15 years in diversifying the economies. But that diversification also feeds off labor that is available from the universities. And that shift away from having people come in not only affects the university as a business, but in concentric circles affects almost every other business in those areas. It is unfortunate for those towns versus, let's say, smaller universities in larger areas. So, for example, the university I work for, Sonoma State, is going to have a lot of problems on campus as a business, but the concentric circles in the community will be smaller than in Chico and Davis because of the broader and bigger economies that surround it. So yeah, there's no doubt about it that in small suburban and rural California, where there is a university that has now gone online, while that continues, it's going to transmit some pain into the local economy.
Dr. Eiler, what would be some harbingers that things were going to start to improve?
Great question. So three local indicators to watch are housing prices, because that's something that will potentially either turn into a good cycle of consumer confidence. I've kept the wealth in my house. A lot of people aren't leaving the area, which means the basic economics of the area might remain stable. And I'm not going to feed off that sort of mass psychology and suddenly put my house up because I think the party's over. So as long as housing prices stay stable, that's a harbinger of good things. And it's certainly an indicator to watch. The next one is taxable sales. The consumer confidence piece is one thing, but that's a survey instrument. The next piece is whether that consumer confidence becomes taxable sales for two reasons. One, it suggests that people are buying something other than non-taxable goods like food. And the second, it starts to feed back into our municipality sales tax revenues that they're going to need. And then, of course, the housing price thing is also something that will give a lot of municipalities a breath of fresh air in terms of not affecting property taxes. The third piece, which is the most tricky, is the flow of tourism and ultimately whether or not we see the number of cases spike again. When we open up our economies, especially ones that depend on a flow of people, what we're going to hopefully see is we're going to see people flow in. And we're going to see relatively minimal changes in the number of COVID-19 cases. And the reason I say it that way is because probably the biggest threat specifically to a place like Chico is going to be inbound people from outside, where you may have some localized dealing with COVID-19 who might bring it with them and then lead to another spread. But you need that flow of people to support the tourism businesses. So whether or not, for example, hotel occupancies go up, do you see more taxable sales spinning there too? But the third is whether or not the caseload rises. If those three things happen positively, plus the other things I just told you, where the taxable sales kind of tie both to the residential spending and to the tourism spending, those will all be good things for stabilizing the business capacity in the Chico area. Where it goes from there is going to then have, you know, these concentric circles. Will the continued rebuilding of paradise happen, or is this going to put the brakes on? Will you see students come back and be able to feed off that positive capacity that's there still in growing momentum on the positive side in the spring, assuming we turn the corner and potentially get a vaccine sometime early next year. All that stuff is sort of the second order effects that might be coming after those first harbingers take place.
The stock market has kind of been in a recovery mode after a deep shock. People who've been watching their retirement portfolios or 401ks with great concern, what would be some signs that it's time to reallocate or get out of the stock market entirely? And what would be a safe harbor?
That's a great question. I get asked a lot about the market and where to put money. And I'm going to tell you for entertainment purposes only that what you should be doing is buying and holding based on when you need cash. So if you don't need the cash, the market still, generally speaking, provides returns over the long haul. If you need the cash, where you should be reallocating is how it's going to help you for the projection financially of your life. So for example, if you intend to retire, you might want to move it from the market, which might be more volatile, into something that's going to provide you with either more dividends or more cash flow, because you're going to need to live off that once you're in retirement mode, regardless of what your retirement is otherwise. But from a safe harbor standpoint, it's very tricky. When the Fed cut rates, it provided a boost to equity prices because there's a natural offset between how you value equities and what's going on in interest rates. That's an inverse relationship.
It makes it cheaper for companies to borrow and they're not paying as much in interest. Unfortunately, instead of expanding and creating jobs, they tend to try to boost up their stock prices by buying up their own shares.
100%. And as long as you are watching that diligently with your financial advisor, you can take advantage of some of that as well, even though that sounds like, corporate rehauling, if you will. The critical factor is there's really not, let's say, pure safety from risk other than bonds. But bonds also have opportunity costs inside of them that you might give up gains in the market by being in something that's more safe. So it really boils down to buying and holding against a total financial strategy for your home based on where you see your life going. So trying to find a safe harbor is something that investors have been trying to do for, millennia and have failed. It's hard to hit a bullseye on a moving dartboard. If you think about it, this is really the Great Recession and 9/11 stacked on top of each other, because 9/11 had an effect on tourism that lingered for about a year. And then we finally started to reclaim our movements around planet Earth. This is going to have a very similar effect on how we look at travel and ultimately places like Chico, how it looks at inbound visitors, students, and tourists alike. One of the things about the Chico area, because it had a disaster almost 2 years ago now, that has changed Butte County in ways that have affected the city of Chico, both positively and negatively. The housing market is going to probably be the critical factor in how the city and the county ultimately come out of this, because consumers tend to be relatively fickle. And once they feel some positivity, they tend to spend again. But the duration of unemployment is kind of the fulcrum factor there between consumer confidence then leading to housing market confidence. Because if people are out of their jobs for a longer period of time and consumer confidence sags, it might lead to houses going up on market and we might have more of a repeat of the Great Recession, and we might lean more toward that than the quickness of the recovery after 9/11. If that's how I've tried to describe it to people, and we are trying to avoid that big problem in housing again if we can help it. But the longer people are out of work that are homeowners, the trickier it's going to get.
That was Dr. Robert Eiler, a professor of economics and director of the Center for Regional Economic Analysis at Sonoma State University. He also serves as dean of the School of Extended and International Education. He was speaking with NSPR's Mark Albert. And that is your program. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, news director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Until next time, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.